You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
We continue on our series in the battle for the Augsburg Confession in 19th century America with Dr. Mackenzie today. This episode of The Coffee Hour is underwritten in part by Concordia University, Nebraska. You can learn more about Concordia University, Nebraska by visiting cune.edu. Joining us today, the Reverend Dr. Cameron Mackenzie, the Forrest E. and Francis H. Ellis Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Dr. Mackenzie, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
Now, last time we finished up the breakup of the General Synod and then talked about the free conferences and a little bit about the General Council as well. So we have General Synod, free conferences, General Council, keeping those all straight. And so where would you like to pick up today? A little more on the free conferences?
Yeah, we should do a little bit more on the free conferences because at this point, we're starting to move toward the creation of a third National Lutheran Church body, and that's called the Synodical Conference. So by the time this series is over, we're going to have, if we ignore the Southern Synod, we will have three national church bodies: the General Synod, the General Council, and the Synodical Conference. And the Missouri Synod, which was a little involved with the General Council by participating in that first planning meeting, is fully engaged with the establishment of the Synodical Conference. And in terms of our major theme, Augsburg Confession, Confessional Subscription, and the like, what we'll find is that in the General Council, their subscription is good and clear, but they have difficulty following through on application. It's fine that you subscribe to the Lutheran Confessions, but what does that mean for how you do church things? And we're going to see that from the Missouri Synod standpoint, that's where they failed. But in terms of Missouri Synod's involvement, just to recap and expand a little bit, when that definite platform came out in the middle of the 1850s, Walther was pleased at how the confessional wing of the General Synod said, "No thanks, we're not going there." And not only Walther, but also the president of the Ohio Synod had the same kind of reaction, that Walther thought, hey, maybe we ought to see just where Lutherans are in this country with respect to the Augsburg Confession, their understanding of it. And the best way to do that would be to invite Lutherans from all of these different church bodies who subscribe to the unaltered Augsburg Confession to come to a conference. And it'd be a free conference. We're not coming there as synod. We're not representing the synods or anything. We're just coming there as Lutherans to see where we are in terms of the meaning of our confession, our adherence to the Augsburg Confession. Wilhelm Lehmann of the Ohio Synod thought this was a great idea as well. And of course, one of the interesting things about the Ohio Synod's involvement is that just a decade earlier, some of Missouri's founders, like Wilhelm Seeler, had withdrawn from the Ohio Synod because of its lack of confessional subscription. But over that decade, under the leadership of people like Wilhelm Lehmann, Ohio had moved in a confessional direction, and they had made confessional subscription a requirement for membership. So they're already on board with the confessions. Missouri's already on board with the confessions. Both leaders are cheering for Croth and the Pennsylvania crowd. And so the two leaders said, let's have these free conferences. And so they called one to Columbus, Ohio, their first one in 1856. And you had people from the Ohio Synod and the Missouri Synod, but it also had the Pennsylvania Ministerium, the New York Ministerium, and others. The church where they had their first meeting was Layman's Church in Columbus, Ohio. They decided in their first resolution that their goal should be to unite in one evangelical Lutheran church of North America that should be built on unity of doctrine based on unqualified subscription to the unaltered Augsburg Confession. So they decided to conduct these conferences by going through the Augsburg Confession, article by article. They weren't going to worry about any of the practical stuff, just see if everybody understood those articles in the same way. This was the first of four. 1856, 1857, 1858, 1859. And representatives from a variety of Lutheran church bodies came to these. They made it through about half of the doctrinal articles, found agreement on each of those articles, and agreed to meet for a fifth convention, 1860. Didn't happen. Why not? Walther wasn't going to be there. He went back to Germany for health reasons, as well as also promote a confessional Lutheranism. And Ohio decided that they weren't going to participate. Now, I'm going to tell a couple of stories here that aren't really important, but they do show kind of the human side of what's going on when you have these doctrinal meetings. There is other stuff going on. So what am I talking about here? Well, a Pastor Koenig from Wapakoneta, Ohio, had been a member of the Missouri Synod, and he communed some members of the Reformed churches. So he got into trouble with his synod. So he quit the Missouri Synod and affiliated with the Ohio Synod. That wasn't too good. There was also an ex-Ohio Synod man who accused Wilhelm Lehmann of not being strict with members who belonged to the Masonic Lodge. And Missouri had accepted him. So there's this fight over some of these persons changing synod because they got mad at their leadership and it didn't seem to stop them from switching. So, all right. Both men are kind of a little upset with each other. Both synods are a little upset with each other. And then the Civil War comes along, and so they don't resume the free conferences. But they had been successful, at least as far as they'd gotten, in terms of the doctrinal agreement. And that's why, after the Civil War, when the General Council is talked about being formed, Walther wants to go back to those free conferences that had been interrupted by the Civil War to see if they couldn't establish real doctrine agreement on the rest of the Augsburg Confession. So that's kind of where Walther and the Missourians are coming from. But, well, I shouldn't say but. So Missouri did not join the General Council, but Ohio did join the General Council. So did Iowa. So did Wisconsin. So did Minnesota. So did Illinois. None of these are particularly famous today because they've all been absorbed by others, but they were real synods like the Missouri Synod at that time. So why didn't it work? Well, it was the Ohio Synod that took the lead, basically taking Cross at his word. And I know Cross wasn't deceptive, but remember when Missouri didn't join, Cross said, well, you should join, and then we'll take care of the problems that are dividing us. So Ohio joins and said, well, here are our problems that we think are dividing us and that we need to wrestle with. And so they articulated 4 points of doctrine and practice that they knew members in the General Council were divided over, and they thought they needed to be dealt with and dealt with biblically, and they ought to reach agreement on these things. So what were the 4 points? Well, one of the 4 points was millennialism. Is it okay for Lutherans to teach that Christ will come back after a 1,000-year reign, that is the church flourishing, everybody joining all over the world, and then Christ comes, or that Christ will come back and then there will be a 1,000-year reign? Are those positions compatible with the Bible and the Lutheran confessions? Millennialism. Well, some Lutherans were millennialists, others weren't. So that was point number one. Then there are a couple of fellowship questions. Altar fellowship, pulpit fellowship. Pulpit fellowship means, of course, preaching, well, I've got to say this, agreeing to preach in somebody else's pulpit, on what basis should you do that? And the Missouri and the Ohio Synod said, you shouldn't exchange pulpits. You shouldn't preach in pulpits other than confessional Lutheran pulpits. So if you're a Lutheran, you shouldn't invite the Presbyterian to come in, nor should you go to the Presbyterian, nor should you hold a revival service in which you kind of take turns. And that was kind of the thing that they'd inherited from Charles G. Finney and the New Measures, that you'd have these revival services. And, you know, it didn't matter too much whether you're Lutheran or Reformed or Methodist. You just kind of took your turn. All right. So pulpit fellowship. And then the question was communion fellowship. Who should you commune? Is communion a confession of faith, as a result of which you ought to be united in that faith before you commune together? Or is it something less than that? And so you could commune people from other denominations. Now, on both of those, pulpit and altar fellowship, the General Synod had been totally on the opposite side from the Missouri Synod. But some of those churches that were from the General Synod's General Council still had those practices. So they had become confessional theologically, but not practically. And so Ohio said, we've got to come to an agreement on this. And then the fourth one was belonging to secret societies. This is not very big anymore today. But even when I was a kid growing up in a parsonage, it was still something that pastors were concerned about. And that is members who became part of the Masonic Lodge. That's what they meant by a secret society. And you got in by taking an oath, a secret oath. And then there were religious rites and prayers that were integrated into the meetings of these groups. And then when you died, there were funeral rites by the leaders of these groups. And the Masons particularly were not Christian. They come out of the Enlightenment. They're basically Unitarian. Speak of God, the architect of the universe. So the question was, could members of Lutheran congregations also belong to these secret societies? And again, this was something that the General Council had inherited from the General Synod. And I'll give you a good example from Fort Wayne. The founder of St. Paul's Lutheran Church, the oldest Lutheran church in Fort Wayne, was a man by the name of Henry Rudisill. But he was also the founder of the Masonic Lodge here in Fort Wayne. Yeah. He left St. Paul's not quite 10 years after it was founded, about 8 years. And he had helped to found Trinity English Lutheran Church here in Fort Wayne. Language was one of the issues, too. Trinity English was a church within the General Council. So here in Fort Wayne, there were St. Paul's and Trinity English, both now confessional, let's grant that. But Trinity English inherited this custom of having lodge members, whereas the Missouri Synod said, no, we can't do this. So the secret societies were an issue also. That's one of the 4 points. So you had millennialism, altar fellowship, pulpit fellowship, and then secret societies. So Ohio said, okay, General Council, what are you going to do about these things? Okay. Well, the answer was not, they were going to deal with them, but not very satisfactorily. So for example, on fellowship, Croth articulated a rule that actually sounds pretty good. The rule is Lutheran pulpits are for Lutheran ministers only. Lutheran altars are for Lutheran communicants only. That sounds pretty good. But then he added exceptions. The exceptions to the rule belong to the sphere of privilege, not of right. The determination of the exceptions is to be made in consonance with these principles by the conscientious judgment of pastors as the cases arise. What did all that exceptional language mean? Well, in practice, it's going to mean that the pastor, if he's used to communing Reformed, is going to still keep doing it. At least that's the way I'd interpret that. Okay, so you have Ohio and other member synods saying this is not going to work. And so Ohio left the General Council, Wisconsin left the General Council, Minnesota left the General Council, and Iowa halfway left the General Council. What Iowa decided to do was to send delegates, but not to vote. So they were half in and half out. Okay. So you get the picture. The General Council isn't working with a lot of these Midwest Lutheran groups. And Walther and Company realize this, and they think now there's still another way we could join in a national church body with these folks if we would meet with them one by one. And so that's what Missouri Synod starts to do, meet with these church bodies one by one. And they're successful with some and not with others. And maybe we can talk a little bit more about that, but maybe it's time for a break.
Yeah.
Okay.
It is time for our break. We're talking with the Reverend Dr. Cameron McKenzie about the battle for the Augsburg Confession. We'll be right back. You're listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
At Concordia University, Nebraska, discover a distinctly Christian community that equips students to live by faith with courage, character, and conviction. Intentionally combining our Christian faith, Lutheran heritage, rigorous academics, and practical real-life experiences, we prepare students to fulfill a higher purpose in their vocations and life. Learn more about Concordia University, Nebraska at our website, cune.edu. That's cune.edu.
Welcome back to The Coffee Hour. I'm Sarah Golseth.
I'm Andy Bates.
We're talking with the Reverend Dr. Cameron McKenzie, Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, about the General Council and whether or not they were actually doing things the way that Walther and the others in the Missouri Synod wanted things to be done. What happens, Dr. McKenzie, when Missouri decides to start meeting with these other geographic synods?
Yeah. Missouri decided that because of the experience they had with the free conferences, plus also the things that leaders in some of these other Midwest synods were saying and talking about, that possibilities for formally establishing fellowship between these synods was possible, and that they ought to investigate formally now whether they were in agreement on doctrine and practice about what it meant to subscribe not only to the Augsburg Confession, but to the entire Book of Concord. And so there was a series of meetings that were held between the Missouri Synod and between representatives of the Missouri Synod and these other church bodies. I'll talk about a couple of failures and then some successes. Very early in its history, the Missouri Synod had tangled with the Buffalo Synod. And that's, they had nothing to do with where the Buffalo roam. It's Buffalo, New York was where their headquarters were. So we had the Buffalo Synod, the Missouri Synod. And they had divided, especially over the doctrine of the church and ministry, in particular, the notion of a congregation being responsible for calling a pastor, and then the doctrine of practice of ordination being an apostolic rite that confirmed the call, but it didn't make a man a minister. It was an apostolic rite and wasn't absolutely necessary. So those were the points of debate. But they were out there, and Missouri arranged for having what they called a colloquy, which was a formal conversation between representatives of their synod and representatives of the Missouri Synod. The leader of the Buffalo Synod in the early days had been a man named Grabau, but he had run into problems with his own membership. And by the time the Missouri reached out for a colloquy, which was in the 1860s, Grabau had been rejected by his own Buffalo Synod. So in 1866, when Walther and Seeler met with people like Hofstetter and von Rohr from the Buffalo Synod, and they met actually in Buffalo at the end of 1866, they talked about their doctrine of the church, which, and they agreed that in the Apostles' Creed, it's defined as a communion of saints, that is, believers. And then they also agreed that outside the visible church, that is, outside of the group of confessing Christians, there is no salvation. Make a long story short, they came to an agreement on all of these outstanding issues, with the exception of a few who did not. Now, somewhere I've got some numbers on this, and it is like, I can't find the numbers. But the majority of the Buffalo Synod pastors agreed with the Missouri Synod and actually ended up joining the Missouri Synod. A minority did not. They ended up, these were six pastors. Yeah, here we go. 12 pastors joined the Missouri Synod. 7 pastors did not. They ended up in the next generation joining the Wisconsin Synod, but it took a while for them to join. And 3 pastors stayed loyal to Grabau in the Buffalo Synod. So that's not an overwhelming victory, but it was basically a victory for the Missouri Synod position with the Buffalo. But they go out of, they're no longer a synod that we have to deal with. So that was one of the church bodies. Then in 1867, met with the Iowa Synod, and they reached a little bit of agreement on the nature of confessional subscription. And so there was some positive feelings about that one. But subsequently, they didn't reach agreement on questions like Sabbatarianism, millennialism, and so forth. And so the Iowa Synod and the Missouri Synod were unable to establish fellowship. There were a handful of congregations in the Iowa Synod that did agree with the Missouri, and so they ended up leaving. Many of them joined the Wisconsin Synod, but that was okay because the Wisconsin Synod was one of those groups that would have success when the Missouri Synod met with them. So let me say a little something about this. The Ohio Synod met with the Missouri Synod in 1868, reached complete agreement. The Wisconsin Synod met with the Missouri Synod in October of 1868 and reached complete agreement. The English Synod met with the Missouri Synod in 1869 and reached complete agreement. Minnesota Synod met with the Missouri Synod in June of 1872 and reached complete agreement. The Missouri Synod was already in fellowship with the Norwegian Synod. That's maybe a little more complicated story than we can tell right this moment. Maybe we'll save it till next time. But at any rate, they were in fellowship. And so we have, by the time we're in the early 1870s, we have Missouri Synod has established through these formal colloquies, doctrinal and practical agreement with a real handful of synods. And they're the ones that will go forward and form the synodical conference based upon complete agreement in doctrine and in practice. So maybe that's where we'll call it quits for today and go forward and maybe finish this up next time.
So we've moved from the general synod to free conferences, to general conference, to colloquies, now to the synodical conference.
Right.
Okay. Just making sure I'm following the storyline here.
Yeah. I think you got it.
Very good. And next time we'll talk a little bit more about the Norwegian Synod, hopefully, and their fellowship with Missouri Synod.
Yep.
All right. The Reverend Dr. Cameron McKenzie, the Forrest E. and Francis H. Ellis Professor of Historical Theology at Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne. Dr. McKenzie, thanks for helping us understand this battle for the Augsburg Confession in 19th century North America.
Glad to do it. Glad to do it. Glad you're finding it interesting. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Coffee Hour. I'm Andy Bates.
I'm Sarah Golseth.
The Coffee Hour with Andy and Sarah is a production of KFUO. To support The Coffee Hour and KFUO Radio, visit KFUO.org. You can also text KFUO to 41444 or send an email to gifts@KFUO.org. And you can call us at 800-844-0524. KFUO. Christ for you, anytime, anywhere.